direct from the Los Angeles Underground. It's time for your new favorite podcast, The Superiority Complex.
It's like honey in your ear holes.
I love what I see. I like doing that part live. It does. I do enjoy that.
You never know what's going to happen.
You never know, John. Welcome to the Superiority Complex, everyone. Myself and John Sandy are here today. We're missing 3/5 of the crew today, but that's okay. This is just like those episodes when Kirk and Spock would go alone. They'd leave bones. You know, remember that?
Yeah.
Sometimes they would go alone, and that's usually when one of them would go nuts or get like.
And it's like, in real life, you wouldn't have the number one and number two people going on the planet.
That's it.
Or jumping on the Galileo. It's like, really? The two top guys are going to leave the ship?
Yeah, I love that they always take McCoy, who is basically your chief surgeon.
See, now the top three people are not on the ship. So now what happens?
Yeah, you take some random medic.
Isn't like a protocol in the real Air Force or Navy where you would never take the top three people?
I don't think the admiral leaves the ship.
Somebody has to stay on board.
You send people.
But it's a TV show, so what are you going to do?
McHale's Navy. Did McHale go on the... Would he go on...
Well, it's a PT boat.
It's not, would he go
it's
on
not the
shore?
Starship Enterprise.
Well, we just watched Apocalypse Now. The chief never... Or not the chief, but the captain never left the boat.
Chief, yeah. They called him chief.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's true. He's always on the boat. And
what did we learn from that movie? You never get out of the boat. Never get out of the boat.
That's right. Never. I love how he's all, that's right. Never get out of the boat.
That's it.
Unless you're going all the way.
I want some mangoes.
Gonna get me some mangoes.
I'm a saucier. Specialize in sauces. You know, watching that movie again, we're of course referring to Apocalypse Now, really reminded me of how much I loved 2/3 of that movie.
Oh, yeah.
It's great.
It's so solid. So much great dialogue.
Yeah, really good.
You get pulled in. You really get to know everybody.
Yeah. And so when they die, it does mean something.
You really get attached to Chef.
Yeah. Well, all of them. Mr. Clean and
Lance. Yeah, you're right. That was the genius of the whole thing. You're on this boat. You really get to know everybody. And then one by one, they all get picked off.
Yeah.
Well, kind of like the Dirty Dozen. By the end, you got three guys left.
That's it. We're spoiling all the movies we've watched on the Digital Movie Club. You should have watched them by now. That's your fault.
You can't do a spoiler alert on a movie that came out in 1965. You
know? I just watched, for the next movie club, I just...
Spoiler alert.
I just watched Coffee, and I started Nashville. And not to get too far into it, but I forgot what a jerk Henry Gibson plays.
Oh, yeah.
But perfect. He's perfect in today's, he's a real like Mitch McConnell type character. So
Yeah. He turns up in a lot of Altman films. He's in The Long Goodbye too.
Yeah.
I think Altman gave him the most work outside of Laughing.
Good old Henry Gibson.
Yeah.
Which is a play on Henrik Ibsen. Did you know that?
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's how he came up with his... Is that a stage name?
I think it's... Yeah, he came up with it as a play on...
Oh, wow.
On Henrik Ibsen.
How about that?
Yeah, about that?
That's sharp.
Yeah, the good old Henry Gibson. See, you don't even know.
Didn't know.
I forgot where I found that out.
How about that?
Yep, there you go.
So it lends a whole...
What did Ibsen write? Did Ibsen write The Doll's House or the yellow Wallpaper? Which is his most famous work? We're dumb, so please write us at Soup Complex and let us know.
A Doll's House?
Yeah, did Ibsen write that?
I'm trying to think of what...
Yep, it is A Doll's House.
There you go. So see, we know just enough to get by at a cocktail party.
Yeah, that's...
I had a friend once that said, if you know some of this stuff, if you know just enough to fake your way through if you're at a college party... And you could just kind of fake your way through some of this stuff.
That's basically what we do for this whole podcast. We're just pulling... Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. Pay no attention to him.
Just enough to get by.
That's it. That's how we do it, John. Just enough. We have a lot to talk about today, even though it's
I'm
only
glad,
two of us.
Because I thought, what are we going to talk about?
You get nervous when it's just you and I.
I don't get nervous. It's just that I knew that there was not a digital movie club, so I thought, well, how do we fill an hour?
Well, I'm gonna ask you what you've been up to lately. So, have you been watching anything? Mm. Have you been reading anything? Mm. Have you been listening to anything? And then we have listener questions.
Mm. Okay.
Because I have some stuff I want to.
Yeah, I know. You've always got a plan.
Well, I tried to. We want to talk about the popular culture that the kids also love.
I love that. We talk about the popular culture.
That's it.
That the kids are all into.
The kids are all into. Yeah.
With the hey, hey, hey.
And the Timothy Leary and the dropping of the acid.
Oh, great. What the kids are into 50 years ago. Timothy Leary and
dropping
out
and
tune in. And mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's it.
I just thought that was so great that Justine got into laughing. I think that was so great. She's like, oh, you ever hear about this thing called laughing? She got a crash course, you know?
Well, that's the great thing we were just talking about before the episode. I dropped the unauthorized Bash Brothers experience. Drops a couple of tracks on you before.
That puts her ahead of so many people that have no clue of what laughing was.
But that's the great thing about it. That's a great thing. That's why Netflix is something of a necessity now, because where else are you going to run specials like that?
Exactly.
You know, if you run it, you know, the big networks, they want the next Game of Thrones. They don't want.
Well, she turned me on to the Robert Johnson documentary, which I saw.
How was it?
It was good. It was very good. I wish it was a little longer. It was about 45 minutes, 49 mm-hmm. minutes. I was at my buddy's house on Memorial Day, and we watched a couple documentaries on Netflix. I don't have Netflix. That's the only time I can really do that, is I'll be over there, and I'll say, hey, you want to pop this in real quick? And it was very good. You saw it, right?
I haven't seen it yet.
The Robert Johnson documentary. There's another one on the origins of the song The Lion Sleeps Tonight, which will blow your mind.
John, can I tell you?
Have you seen it?
Aside from the Beatles, there's one thing I can't stand, and it's the song The Lion Sleeps Tonight.
This documentary will blow your mind. That goes back to 1939, this guy in South Africa. Put that on a 78. You are going to love this thing. It pulls you in.
I'll have to talk to it.
It's not, you know, you think you know where that originated. You know, everybody thought it was like a doo-wop thing from the 50s or maybe Pete Seeger. This goes all the way back to a 78 that was issued in South Africa in 39. This guy never got the royalties. This is all about this guy's trying to, there's this guy that kind of intercedes and tries to get the family, the daughters of this guy. He's long since gone. He died in poverty. He's trying to get the daughters the royalties to The Lion Sleeps Tonight, which a million people have covered, but the big money came when Disney put it in The Lion King. I think it's just sort of a throwaway moment,
yeah.
But it's also in the Broadway musical. It's turned into a thing. It's going to be in this new movie.
Yeah.
And so he said, my God, just on that alone, there's got to be millions that Disney should be throwing in the direction of the descendants of the people that wrote it, you know.
You know what's funny is you...
It'll blow your mind, Mario.
Well, here's the thing. I don't really like the Eagles, and
yeah.
I don't know if you saw the Eagle documentary.
Yeah.
The documentary on the Eagles.
Yeah.
It's like 3 hours long, and I loved it.
Sure.
It was like,
it's not necessary to be a fan.
No.
You know, I know.
Because it's just a fascinating... The story's fascinating.
The personalities, and to see the way the business works.
Yes.
And how... Definitely. The five guys become the biggest thing in America.
Definitely, yeah.
You know, just
without being able to get along, pretty much.
Yeah, that's the thing that always blows my mind about the Eagles. It's such the most backbiting, crazy nest of vipers. And somehow they crank out all these gold records.
Yeah, they become the Eagles.
You get it down to where it's just two guys. They keep kicking people out until you're down to the last two guys, and then one of them dies, and he's still taking it on the road. I'm always amazed when there's one original guy left, and they still take it out on the road, you know?
Yeah, they still call themselves the whatevers.
Yeah, I mean, I guess Joe, at this point, you know, Joe Walsh has been with them like a good 20 years or something, 30 years. But you think about that original lineup, the only guy left is Don Henley.
Yeah. It's crazy. And well, you know, he's a bit of a desperado, so there's that. These are the jokes we strive for. On the, coming back around, though, what I was going to mention. Aside from being a place for documentaries like stuff on, that's the great thing about Netflix is you need an outlet like that. There's no outlet like that, and I know people are mad that now Netflix stuff is being up for consideration for the Oscars and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But where else are you going to drop? You know, the thing with the Bash Brothers, you know, Sandberg and the Lonely Island dropped that. Where else? I mean, you need a forum for that. It's 30 minutes long. It's this 30-minute basically parody video.
Yeah.
And where else? I mean, where else are you going to put something like that with good production values? You know, you could throw something up on YouTube, but it's not going to look, you know. I mean, I guess you could, but you're not going to hit the same amount of people that are sitting in front of a couch and see that, you know,
hard to be
on
mad.
Netflix.
Hard to be mad at a at a format that makes all these quality documentaries available.
Yeah, exactly.
And even like the Coen brothers said, even for like the Ballad of Buster Scruggs, they said, who was going to finance that? It was too weird. It's some weird-ass Western anthology. Who else was going to produce that? It was going to be Netflix or nobody.
Yeah.
So they said, you know, you have to kind of look at it that way. You know, you can kind of, you know, go back and forth on, are they movies? Are they not movies? But basically, you got to say hats off that stuff is getting produced. It really is a golden age for documentaries.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was already with all the stuff that was on PBS, but now Netflix, my God, it seems like sometimes it looks like half their content is documentaries.
Yeah, you know? Have a lot of documentaries going on out there.
And it's good stuff. So hell, you know.
HBO's gotten into it too. They do a lot of like little documentary series. Well, they've been doing that for a while.
Yeah.
Some of it was a little more lurid, but they're getting more into the you know, like Taxi Cab Confessions. But now they're doing like more documentary series and
I'm a sucker for that stuff. I could watch documentaries all night long.
Me too. I just rewatched for like the 12th time Apollo 11. I took it over.
Wow.
My brother hadn't seen it, took it over, and you know, he started, and the second it flickered on, my brother just said, "Wow, this looks amazing," and then riveted. And even he said when they were doing the countdown, he's like, "Man, this is like nerve wracking." You know, I was like, "Yeah, you know how it ends, but
That really is amazing when you can you get a nail biter and it's like, you know, they're going to get up there.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to get back. But somehow you're still kind of nervous.
Yeah,
you know,
it was great.
Yeah.
They really did a good job with that documentary.
That is great editing.
That was all editing.
Yeah.
That whole movie is editing.
Because what'd you say? They were sitting on days worth of footage and they had to get it down to, what was it, 2 hours?
Yeah. And basically tell a story without they decided not to do any narration. I think the only narration you get is Cronkite's, you know. Kind of waxing poetic in the beginning and then at the end. But and that's great stuff in and of itself.
That was a genius move. No talking heads, no voiceovers. We're just going to show you. I mean, that's how else can you put somebody in the driver's seat, you know?
Yeah, the only thing they cheated with was doing the little animations that showed you.
Brilliant.
But you needed that.
You need that. That was brilliant because you have to have something that sort of explains what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a great unobtrusive way to do it.
Well,
you just sort of flash it. Okay, here's how they got it. How many minutes they got.
But the great thing is they're using actual, it's the public relations officer explaining what's going on. So it's not even like they dropped it. They just dropped the animation in, but it's still the explanation they're talking about. During, it's like the public relations officer is just giving you the rundown of what's going to happen, you know, because they're...
That movie deserves every award that's available. I don't know, you know, if it's up for the Oscars this year or last year.
You know, I just watched the Peter Jackson, They Shall Not Grow Old.
Ooh, how was that?
You know, it's my wife laughed because I fell asleep twice, but it was just because I watched it late. Like, it was...
How was that?
It's really fantastic.
So he went back and he speed corrected it and colorized it.
You know, the colorized footage always looks colorized.
Even today.
It does have that little...
I know they do better.
Kind of like that pastel...
And I don't know why it's necessary, but I guess for a feature film, this thing was in the theaters.
But
I guess,
man,
they just have to do it.
But man, they did a great job. And it's all told, it's all oral histories that were recorded by various historians through the years with all these World War I veterans.
Nice.
So they're just, you're hearing the actual voices of people that were there.
I gotta see that.
It's really, really good.
How long is it?
That's a very personal question.
I see.
That's the old Monty Python.
I know.
How long is it?
It's a bit of a personal question. Cut.
I think it's about 90 minutes. About 90 minutes, but it's all, I was excited when I realized it was all these voices of just men.
He went there. Yeah, he didn't. Again, I guess that's a new trend. Let's not have a bunch of people talking about it now. Let's get people that were there talking about it, you know? Interesting, because that always shades it when you have somebody now. I mean, it's great having historians. Obviously, if it's a civil war, you know, you got to have somebody's perspective on it. But that is a nice way to do it. We're just going to have the voices of the soldiers.
Yeah.
So was that Netflix as well?
No, I did. I got it on.
Actually,
I bought it on digital.
It's out there now.
I bought it on
digital.
Yeah,
that was in the theaters. Not very long.
I missed it. I think the Aretha Franklin documentary is out in the theaters right now.
Yeah,
I got to go check that
out.
Oh
my God, I really wanted to see that in the theater, but now it's out. I think it's even at the. It's out on DVD. I think
This week.
The next Peter Jackson project is the Let It Be tapes.
Oh, he's doing a documentary.
Because.
I mentioned that to you.
Yeah. And because there's probably hundreds of hours, they just kept the the reel-to-reel going.
Well, I'll tell you what. If it's anything like They Shall Not Grow Old, you're in for a treat, because they really did a great... He starts with footage that you're used to seeing, and as they're talking about it, slowly the frame starts to fill up, and it goes to like widescreen and then color.
Nice.
Kind of like a Wizard of Oz.
Oh,
kind of
that's
like,
cool.
Yeah.
So he's definitely the perfect guy to do this, because this is the holy grail for the Beatles fans. Because you always heard there's a million bootlegs, because they were filming the sessions. There was always tons and tons of audio tape and film of them, because that was the idea. We're going to film you making this record. And they weren't having a very good time. You know, it wasn't peak time for the Beatles. So they never knew what to do with it. And then Let It Be has been out of print for years. That was a pretty good movie. You get to see him on the rooftop. It's worth it to see him on the rooftop.
Yeah,
doing their last show together. And hell, Ron Howard's, you know, they ended with that pretty much.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Days a week.
Yeah. I don't know if it was the entire performance, but they end with clips from that rooftop because they wanted to kind of take it to the end, you know. And this will be coming out in conjunction with a reissue of the Let It Be movie. So you'll get the making of, and then you'll get the actual movie, because that has not been in theaters for decades. And it really, I don't think it's ever been available on DVD. It was on video. Some people have like old video copies, mm-hmm. but they never put it on DVD. So it's, yeah. Beatle fans, this is going to be a big year.
You'll love it if you're...
Because Abbey Road, they're also, I think Giles Martin is going to do, I think he's going to do the same thing he did with the White Album and Sgt. Pepper. I think he's going to go back and go through the tapes and see if there's any gems. And then, thankfully for you, Mario, the 50-year Beatle. Everything, this whole last 10 years, it's been, you know, the 50th anniversary.
Yeah.
It took them 10 years to get from the first album to the last album.
I'm excited. Can you tell?
It's never it's never ending with the Beatles.
No.
You know?
I know.
There's always, but I really don't see what else you could dig up.
I'm used to it.
They have now dug up every clip, every soundbite, every interview.
Well, let's hope so. I'm kidding.
You're like, enough with the Beatles already.
Listen, everybody loves them. It's just not my cup of tea.
That'd be great if that
was your... Hey, have a cup of tea.
It'd be great if that was your blurb. At least we got that with the Kinks, with the Village Green. They did the great big box set. Did you see that? Did you see the great big box set they did this year for Village Green? You got albums, singles, CDs, mm-hmm. posters.
I didn't get it. Yeah. Did you get it?
No, because I've already picked that album up. That particular album, I've already picked it up like 3 or 4 times. And it's pretty much now, I don't know if there's any bonus tracks. I don't know if there's anything we haven't heard. But it's a nice package, you know. You got like picture sleeves of the singles and you know.
There's always... I did pick up the Kinks box set, the LP.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. With all the vinyl.
With all the vinyl.
Oh, nice.
And it even has like...
That's an investment.
Yeah, that is fun.
So with the mono, was it just the mono?
Yeah, the mono tracks. And then you have the...
So is that everything up to Arthur?
It has... everything up to Arthur. And then you have...
60s only.
Yeah. And then you have the two disc, like the...
Oh, I forgot. What is it, the Black Album?
Yes, the Black Album.
Yeah, that was an odd thing, because that came out like either before or after Lola. And it's funny because it's not quite as sharp as the Kink Chronicles.
Yeah, that's still a good one.
Because John Mendelsohn just had, I don't know, he just had a hunch what should have been on that. He said, let's really get like the B-sides and the oddball stuff mm-hmm. on there. He just knew. It's funny sometimes. Well, because I don't know how much say the Kinks had on that. That might have been like Pie. Might have been the ones that said, well, let's just sort of like shovel up everything we got.
And then you read about just like how back in the day, they didn't, everybody was trying to cash in on the Beatles. So they would tape over stuff. They said the early Kinks recordings were actually, they weren't recorded over, but they were actually using tape that they had done, you know, 5 or 6 other bands and then recorded over it. So that's why the sound is so terrible. And
no.
It was so low budget. They were just trying to catch. They figured these bands weren't going to be around.
They really thought, I mean, even the Beatles initially, they thought, well, how long have they got? 2 years? We better strike while the iron's hot. Mm-hmm. Whatever we can get out of them. Because come on, there's no precedent for that they're going to be around 10 years.
No.
And yeah, Ray Davies said that. He said, you know, the Beatles eventually got the studio time. They said, take your time, 6 months, whatever. When you're done, we've got a hit on our hands. He said with them and the Who, it was like, come on, hurry it up.
Yeah.
You got an hour. You got a song? 1 hour.
Maybe the Stones got a little deference, maybe.
Once they started having hits, but yeah, he said with the Kinks and the Who, it was kind of like, you know, at least with The Who before Tommy, they're kind of like, okay, time's a waste. And, you know, they might give him like a 2 days to do a whole album, you know?
Yeah, and by the 70s, you're doing these really ponderous, you know.
Once you're making money, they go, okay, we can give you longer. But they just thought, come on.
Yeah.
I'm sure they thought it was a novelty. You know, yeah. How long is this? How long will this beat craze?
Yeah. Well, yeah, but then the 70s roll around and then you're doing like The Wall, and you're doing Dark Side of the Moon, and you're doing these kind of
Tales of Topographical. Oh, what was that? The Tales from Topographical Oceans.
Yeah.
It's like a 2-album set. The gatefold folds out like 4 different ways. You got posters and
John, are you a prog rock guy?
Not really.
I've never asked.
It kind of leaves me cold. I love Pink Floyd. Some people don't even think they belong in that category. But like Yes and Genesis and ELP and King Crimson, it all leaves me a little cold. Some of that stuff I like. There are some I like Peter Gabriel. I think some Genesis I can get into, some Yes, but it always left me a little cold.
Mm-hmm.
Like you have one song that takes up an entire side of an album and it's just noodling about. Something like ELP, you just got somebody just like goofing around for like 30 minutes on their keyboards. For me, that's not enjoyable. Maybe for musicians, it's enjoyable, you know, but for me, it always left me a little cold. It's like, you know, this is just going on and it's not going anywhere. Pink Floyd was the exception. You know, pretty much I'm on board. No matter what they're doing, I'm interested. But as I say, some people don't really lump them in with the prog rock bands.
What about your Jethro Tull?
Yeah, that's another one. I guess that qualifies as a prog rock band, yeah. I like the early stuff because it's bluesier. Everything up to Aqualung is kind of on the bluesy side. And then, I don't know, my personal taste, that's another band that just kind of leaves me cold after a while.
Steely Dan?
Yeah, another one. It's a little too cerebral, a little too...
Too clinical.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. My buddy Pat put together a best of Steely Dan, like what he considered was the best, and it was pretty solid. He sent me a disc, and he said, this is all the good stuff if you don't want to sit through the all 12 albums or whatever. And some of it's pretty sharp, but I don't know. Again, some of that stuff, it kind of strikes me as being a little too... too jazzy and not in a good way.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like, I've never been a fan of jazz fusion.
Yeah, that's hard.
And Steely Dan is kind of that sound. It's kind of like a jazz fusion sound. Mm-hmm. It kind of just leaves me cold.
So you don't listen to Bitches Brew is what you're telling me, John?
I don't think I've ever heard Bitches Brew all the way through.
It's
different. Now if you're talking Miles Davis, that's like the first fusion album, yeah. Right? So what was the other one? The Sketches of Spain and all that?
No, Sketches of Spain is actually more of a bop album.
So Bitches Brew, that's the one.
Oh, yeah.
He's trying to do like a Hendrix album,
yeah,
right?
Kind of electric. Yeah.
I haven't really heard it. So I'm speaking from a place of ignorance. I'm sure all the Steely Dan fans
that's
will go.
That's the whole point of this. It's the whole point of this podcast.
But for a gut reaction, I don't really enjoy listening into an entire Steely Dan album. That's not pleasurable for me.
What about Blue Oyster Cult, John? What about Blue Oyster Cult?
Boy, that's out of left field.
These are bands that I'm vaguely like, yeah. I don't know the...
There are people that are really into that. Again, Pat has tried to pull me into Blue Oyster Cult for years. And that's another band that's kind of a different band. Before they have that hit, Don't Fear the Reaper, they're kind of a different kind of band. They're really under the radar and not very poppy. They're really strange. And then after Don't Fear the Reaper, they become a little more radio friendly. So there are people that are really into like the first 3 or 4 albums because they're really odd and really eccentric.
What about your Godzilla?
Yeah, you know, by that time they're on the top 40. You know, they're getting airplay. That's the thing. A lot of stuff that like KMET was playing, Don't Fear the Reaper and Godzilla and all that stuff.
Let me tell you about... We're going to talk about this real quick, but you mentioned Yes. Mm-hmm. The only song I know from Yes is the 80s Owner of a Lonely Heart.
Well, you know Roundabout.
Do I?
Yeah. If you pop it on there, everybody's heard Roundabout. That's probably the only Yes song.
Roundabout. Isn't that a Elvis movie? Roundabout.
Roustabout.
Roundabout.
Roustabout.
Roundabout.
Let's hear. Yeah, everybody's heard Roundabout.
Let's hear a Roundabout by...
You'll know it from the opening moments.
What if I don't know it? What if
you will? Every FM station played this.
Saigon.
Oh, still in Saigon.
I have heard this.
You know, it kind of picks up steam and it gets faster and faster. This was the big Yes hit. Yeah.
How did you feel about this back in the day?
Oh, fine. I knew some people who were really diehard fans. I knew people that were Yes fanatics, Genesis fanatics. I could never get on board.
What about Genesis with Phil Collins? You love that, right? The tuxedo with the tennis shoes.
I really hate listening to Phil Collins. I just think he's got the worst voice and the dopiest songs.
John,
and it's a different band. When Peter Gabriel leaves Genesis, it becomes a different band.
John, he can feel it coming in the air tonight.
And see, even people love that. Even people that aren't crazy about Phil Collins love that song. That's a big song for a lot of people. I just always thought he was really just dopey, a real mediocre talent.
Wow. That is rough,
just,
John.
Just bland. Just a voice that just is awful for me.
What about the Tarzan soundtrack? You gotta like that, man.
So, but you know, Christ, how many billions of records did he sell? I just have never been a Phil Collins fan. I do like Peter Gabriel. Some of the weirder Genesis stuff was when Peter Gabriel was the lead. And I like all the solo Peter Gabriel albums, no matter how out there he got.
Sledgehammer.
And even the weirder stuff, that soundtrack for The Last Temptation of Christ, you know, he did some really oddball stuff, and I liked all of it. So, I don't know. If there was any chance of me being a Genesis fan, it wouldn't be the years that Phil Collins was running things.
That's crazy. Well, John,
I mean, he was the drummer, you know, until Peter Gabriel left, he was just the drummer.
Yeah.
So when people say, "Hey, do you like Phil Collins?" I go, "Well, as a vocalist, I think he's a great drummer." You know, it's just like
that's a great line. What do you think of all the? We've talked about this before, but where do you land on the arena rock bands? Are there any that you like? We're talking like Styx and Journey and
Big Thumbs Down.
And
you know, I guess Zeppelin's an arena band, you know.
What about, are they?
They could sell out anything. I know what you're saying, though. You're talking about Journey and Rush and Styx and all that
stuff.
Yeah.
What about...
I'm going to incur the wrath of all that.
Everybody hates you right now.
I know. All the Rush fans are just
everybody
hate
hates
my guts.
You.
Yeah.
Let's put it
on you. let's put this squarely on you.
I've never liked Rush.
You know, I always thought those bands were kind of faceless. You know, you'd hear, like, Journey. There's nothing wrong with Journey, but after you've heard a song a couple times, you go, I don't need to hear that again. I'm already bored of it.
What about Chicago?
Well, I like early Chicago. There's definitely, again, that's another band that at a certain point, they tip into where it's all just ballads. You know, like, their first couple albums have a bit of swing to them, you know? It's a different kind of... You know, you're like the first couple albums, that's a different kind of band. By the time you get to like, you know, 79, they're just doing just, you know, dopey love songs and ballads. Yeah. I kind of like that era. 25 or
64.
Yeah.
That's all I know.
Yeah. Or how about they did that, a real long version of I'm a Man? They did like a 10-minute version of I'm a Man that was kind of cool. I mean, that's what I always, when people say Chicago never did a decent thing in their life, I say, well, listen to that first album. There's some great stuff on that first album. You ever heard that? It's like a real long, jammy version of I'm a Man.
I'm going to check it out.
Yeah.
All right. What about Kansas?
You know, I think when I was in high school, I think I had one Kansas album. It always seemed to me that was like somebody, Kansas and Styx, it was like somebody out in the middle of America, middle America, trying to be like ELP or King Crimson or something. They're trying to do
what
this
about,
proggy thing.
What
know?
About ELO?
Now, ELO, I love. I was playing ELO on the way here. You won't believe
that. Is
that
true?
I was playing a New World record. I just picked up a copy yesterday with bonus tracks.
What about UFO?
Not too familiar with UFO.
Okay.
But ELO I loved all the way through. All the way in high school, junior high school. I always loved ELO.
Mr. Blue Sky?
Yeah, all that. Until they got kind of disco-y.
See, ELO kind of, I feel like
they got real disco-y around 1980.
Am I wrong in feeling like Styx is a spiritual successor to ELO?
No, they're happening simultaneously and it's a different vibe for me.
Okay.
But you know, you're right in that they're both in the top 40 at the same time.
Well, John, remember, I'm stuck in my heads are in my head is in stacks of jazz records.
You know, Jeff Lynne was a huge Beatle fan. That's why he's producing. You know, when they reunited for that anthology, he's the one producing those songs, "Free as a Bird" and "Real Love."
Oh, okay.
George Martin was gone, and that's who they got because he had produced some George Harrison albums that were like big hits, and he was a huge Beatle fan. You'll hear little nods to the Beatles all through ELO. You'll hear snatches of lyrics and themes and even shout-outs. You know? He'll just say, like the Beatles on Hey Jude, you know, in the middle of a song, he'll just go, my love faded away, just like the Beatles on Hey Jude. He just throws it out there.
Wow, really?
He's an unabashed Beatle fan. So, you know, what's amazing to me is how they're still popular. You know, he just sold out the Hollywood Bowl, I think, a couple nights last summer. You know, he's the last guy standing. I mean, for ELO, he wrote them, he sang them. So now he tours as Jeff Lynne's ELO.
Oh, okay.
You know, because, you know, when they started, they had like 9 members. And you know, 2 of them were on cello, 2 of them were on violin, and then you had bass, drums, and guitar. And finally, he got to the point, like by the 80s, where it's like, well, I can do all this with a synthesizer. I don't need an orchestra behind us. It was a novel idea when they started. Hey, it'd be rock and roll with a bunch of strings. And he said, well, we don't need it anymore. We don't need the overhead. Oh, we could achieve this with synthesizers, you know. Did you ever like ELO?
They're fine. And I hate to say that because I know it's...
No. That's the kind of band where if you're not on fire, you're just like, yeah, you either hate them or you're like, yeah, they're fine, you know.
Don't hate me, John. My taste in rock and roll tends toward one band.
Yeah, the Kinks.
Van Halen, that's right.
Yes, Van Halen. The Tin Stored One Band, which is Montrose.
I worked with a guy over the weekend I work with him very infrequently, but he had a great story. He worked at the Man's Chinese. His first job out of high school was in the early, like in the mid-80s. We're about the same age. And so about the time I'm working at the video store, he's working at Man's Chinese. And when the Crossroads movie came out, remember Crossroads?
Yeah.
Speaking of Robert Johnson?
Yeah.
Steve Vai did the guitar work on that. And Steve Vai was at the time, it was after Van Halen had broken up. And Steve Vai was David Lee Roth's guitarist.
That's right. That's
He's
right.
The one that does the
Yankee Rose.
Yeah, Yankee Rose. hey, Dave.
yeah, like so great moments in rock history.
So bad yet so good. Yeah. But he said that. So he's working the counter, and David Lee Roth comes up, and he's like, "Let me get 2 Cokes, man." And then like, so he's like, "Yeah, he's super excited, you know." And so I guess David Lee Roth was well known at the mansion. He used to go sit up in the balcony, and apparently had gotten thrown out on more than one occasion for like drinking beer up there and tossing the cans over the balcony. Yeah. Right? That's what you want to hear about there.
Exactly.
But he said that he orders these 2 large Cokes, and then he's super excited to meet David Lee Roth, you know, and he's like, "Oh, you know, I'll carry this for you, Mr. Roth." And then David Lee Roth grabs the Cokes. He's like, "I've been doing this a long time, man," and just pours like the top third of the Coke out into the planter, and just pulls a bottle of Jack Daniels out, pours it into the...
You're right. That's the sort of... If you're going to hear a story about David Lee Roth, that's what you want to hear, yeah. Holy cow.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. He's like...
What was the movie playing?
I think it was Crossroads.
Yeah,
he was
okay.
At the premiere for Crossroads, and he got to work it. And he was super excited to meet David Lee Roth, you know.
You know, it's funny. I just thought all those band names you're tossing me were all bands that were big when I was in high school, and I was kind of cold on all those bands, which is why I went deeply into the Beatles and the Stones and the Kinks, is that all those bands were huge when I was in high school from like 76 to 80. And I was so kind of like, this is just not, it's just not doing it for me. That I just get the whole time I was in high school, I was digging back like, okay, oh, the Who, the Kinks, the Yardbirds. I just kept, it never ending. Once I got, you know, sort of, got all the Beatle knowledge, I'm like, okay, what else was out there? Ah, yeah, the Stones, the Who, the Kinks, the Yardbirds, the Cream, you know.
The Zombies.
Yeah, you find out some of these bands, the Zombies had like 2 albums, and you're just like, okay, what else? Ah, them, Small Faces, you know. It's just, it's never ending, you know. The deeper you dig, there's always some crazy ass British band, and a lot of ones that never made it over here, like the Pretty Things and the Move.
There you go.
You know, like the Move, that's the beginnings of ELO. That's Jeff Lynne and Bev Bevan. Never had a hit here. So it's just funny. Oh. So that was my escape, because it was all sort of like faceless stadium rock and disco. And that was my escape hatch, was back to the 60s. Other people's escape hatch was the punk. You know, like my last 2 years of high school, punk was just starting to happen. And there might have been 2 people in the entire school, you know. In like 79, there might have been 2, 3 people tops. that were getting into punk.
I'm sorry, I can hear that. What was the first punk band that you were exposed to? Do you remember, John?
I think somebody played me. Somebody played me some Ramones off the first Ramones album, which had already been out probably like 4 years by the time I heard. But it was definitely just something that was being passed around. It wasn't being played on the radio. But somebody, like around 79, I think I might have heard the first two.
The Ramones was the first thing?
Yeah, and then somebody also played me the Sex Pistols. They put it on, not telling me what it was.
Just like a blind taste test.
Well, it was a friend of mine, and to his credit, he knew that if he said, hey, here's the Sex Pistols, I'd go, pfft. But he just said, oh, you know, he just popped it on. I said, hey, that's something you don't hear very often. It's like rock and roll. And he says, yeah, it's the Sex Pistols. I said, so all this, like, oh, gee, the Sex Pistols are coming to get your daughters, and it's just rock and roll. He says, yes, they're all afraid of them because they've got green hair and razor blades and safety pins in their nose. And it's like, but when you get down to it, it's just a return to the old rock and roll, you know?
That's what we want.
Obviously, more than that. It was more political because it was the UK. And in America, punk was not initially all that political. It's the Ramones. It's more about style and sound rather than the lyrics. But in the UK, was very much a political statement.
And which did you like better at the time?
I liked them both. I thought it was great. When I heard the Ramones, I said, this is great. And when I heard the Sex Pistols, I said, man, this is amazing. But by the time I heard the Sex Pistols, they'd already broken up. You know, that whole scene initially didn't last very long. You know, the first wave was over almost before it began. You know, by the time they got here, you know, almost with all those bands, by the time they did their first tour of America, they're just about ready to implode, you know. You know, the Clash did a couple tours of America, not much, you know. Buzzcocks, I think, did like one American tour. They'd already been around a few years by the time they got here. You know?
Yeah, yeah. John, let's take a quick, we're gonna do something we haven't done in a long time.
You got technical difficulties?
Yeah, kinda, but I'm gonna run a promo. So we're not going anywhere, but we're gonna run a promo for another podcast. It's called they were nice enough. Well, you'll find out to know. You'll find out in a second. But I gotta figure out what's this buzzing is.
Oh, okay.
So while I'm doing that, I'm gonna run this promo. So we're not going anywhere.
Maybe you could just erase that last 20 minutes.
No, why? That's good stuff. That was good stuff. So here, listen to this promo. If you need something to listen to, we'll be right back.
If you like podcasts and you like science, come on, baby, listen to us.
Oh, my God.
Is that good?
Yeah, that was epic.
Listen to the Mad Scientist podcast on all of your iTunes and other listening things. I'm your host, Chris Cogswell, here with my co-host, Marie Mayhew.
And we sing. We sing. We sing a lot. We sing for science. Yes.
We talk about science, we talk about history, we talk about ghosts and monsters and UFOs and things, and it's a lot of fun. So come learn about ghosts and UFOs and physics and chemistry and a little bit of biology.
And about economic collapse.
On the Mad Scientist Podcast!
Oh my God.
That's the Mad Scientist Podcast. How about that, Johnny? Can you give him a listen?
Yeah.
Of course you are. Listen, guys, we're back.
Did you find the buzz?
I did find it. It's gone. Okay. And I also want to give a shout out to another podcast that I made friends with last week. The buzz is back.
I still
back.
Hear it, yeah.
That's okay. I don't think they can hear
What's
it.
What's that going to sound like?
They won't hear it. It's in our headphones.
Oh, okay. They're not going to hear it on the... No. Okay. I thought, boy, it's going to be annoying.
And if they do, it can't be any more annoying than we are, John. You know what it is?
That's what I said. Can you just erase that last 20 minutes?
I can't find that little, you know, the little octopus wheel where we're all plugged into? That's what's making that noise. Yeah, you got it. You got it. It sometimes if we move the wire.
The octopus wheel.
This is a peek behind the curtain that nobody wanted, by the way.
That's my new band, Octopus Curtain.
Octopus Curtain. Listen, guys. So listen to this. You're going to love this, John. It's your feet. You're getting it with your feet because the wires are on the ground now. See?
I'm not moving my feet.
Yeah. When you moved your feet. It's okay. They can't hear it. It's just the headphones. We figured that out last time.
The cords are on the ground now.
Yeah, I'll see. Remember, we used to have all the cords up here?
The octopus wheel.
The octopus wheel is up there. So,
wheel in the sky keeps on turning.
I made a friend from across the sea, another friend with the podcast that goes by the name of Verbal Diorama. Verbal Diorama. And it's M at Verbal Diorama is the Twitter handle. But we became friends because she was reviewing. She does a one-person show, which I admire anyone that can do that because you and I struggle with two people. We struggle with five people. But she keeps it interesting and fresh, and it's a movie review podcast. She dives deep into the production and lets you know about all the trivia. But she did a thing on Sky Captain and the World of Tomorrow.
Really?
Which you and I loved.
We're the only two people that loved it.
No, apparently not.
Three. We're the only three people. Four. Four people that loved that movie.
Five. Five. Three.
An almost fanatical devotion to the book. Our six.
Yeah. Our three main weapons.
Well, you still haven't seen a movie like that, I guess.
Well, that's the thing that she was mentioning that I kind of mentioned too. That people didn't know what to make of it at the time. It was all blue screened.
Which Jungle Book was all blue screened. Yeah. But Lion King will be 100%.
You know, they did it in a way that kind of gave it like a dreamlike quality, the way they shot it.
Kind of gauzy.
Kind of soft focus, very soft focus.
Almost steampunk, but more of a 20s thing.
Here's the thing. She came up, this is something I didn't know existed. That type of movie is called diesel punk. So when you do like an alternate, it's basically if the world hadn't gone through the Great Depression, like the way it would have come out, that's diesel punk. So it's kind of a thing that I didn't know about. She explained
steam
it on the
steampunk and then diesel punk.
So diesel punk would be like more modern technology, like you would have
20s and 30s.
Like it would be like if the Roaring 20s had just continued.
Okay, because that is what that looked like.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because that's when things looked the coolest. Mm-hmm. I think you and I agree that's when things looked the coolest.
All Art Deco,
everything from Art Deco to streamlined modern.
Yeah,
that's the best.
So Metropolis would kind of be like
absolutely
early kind of diesel punk. If you follow that kind of. But a really great podcast, M at Verbal Diorama. So
check that out.
She's done seven episodes. I think she's on episode.
Boy,
seven.
Anybody who likes that movie, you've got to check. That
yeah,
out.
That's exactly what made me comment, and she was very nice. And then I realized that I had actually commented twice and mansplained something, so I feel like a jerk about it. So apologies to M over at her movie right now is she's doing Cabin in the Woods right now.
You say she's across the sea?
She's across the sea in the UK.
Ah.
Yep. Yeah, we have a lot of friends over in the UK, John. We're making friends over there. Our friend the Lilypot. If you are one of our UK listeners, I know we have a couple. The Lilypot Standish. She's going to do, she's talking about maybe doing a pop-up, one of those little pop-up stores to do her flowers. So she's a florist.
Mm.
And so we'll keep you posted on that. So our friends from across the sea can order flowers. Would you like a flower? What's that from Dorlock Holmes?
Oh, yeah. A pretty posy.
Mother.
Mother. Hawking flowers without a license. Lock her up. Mother.
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 That's still great.
You always were a good boy, Slasher.
I want to do what's right, I do.
Name?
Shropshire Slasher.
Occupation?
Shropshire Slasher.
Did you say we have a... Is there somebody we know in Manchester?
That would be in the Manchester area, our friend the Lilypot.
Ah.
The Lilypot.
Because I heard they were doing... Right. I heard they were doing a big Pete Shelley... memorial show.
Oh, really?
I don't know if that's going to be in Manchester, but that's where he was from. But I know there's going to do this big star-studded memorial show for Pete Shelley. I wonder if she knows anything about that.
I can't say it. The Lilypot.
The Lilypot.
Say it. The Lily. Lily. Lily.
Lily. Lily.
Lily. Lily. Legs. Lily. Lily.
What's the jab?
Good old Blazing Saddles. Well, here's what I did, John. I went to the old Twitter, and I asked for some Twitter questions from our listeners. And this is always fun. People get excited when they find out it's just John Sandy's show. That's not to put any...
I seriously doubt that.
Look, that's...
I seriously doubt
Eric of Aragon, you nailed it. He said that John never believes it when he says...
That's why I want you to erase the last 20 minutes. It's like nobody wants to hear me going off on Sticks and Pete.
I do.
And Phil Collins.
I do.
I do.
That's right. Yeah. I think you're nice.
I love Santa Claus. It's like, this kid is weird.
I think you do. Get rid of that shirt, kid. It's in bad taste.
Oh, that's the greatest. I don't need your tip. I think you do.
Our friends, this is an offshoot of the What Were They Thinking podcast. It's called For Screen and Country, a BFI podcast. They're actually going through the British Film Institute.
Wow.
Top movies.
Oh, because number one's The Third Man, right?
Is that true?
I think the number one for BFI is The Third Man.
Maybe Brendan can answer that.
Oh, boy.
His question is, what unlikely actor or actress would you like to see get their own kick-ass movie franchise? What unlikely movie actor actress? John, I just realized I'm looking for this.
Am I standing on it?
No, but you're wearing some gleaming white Vans.
Yeah.
Those things are bitching.
Thanks.
I like them. That takes me back to my youth right there.
Yeah, yeah.
Where is that? God dang. I'm going to find that wire.
I know. It drives you nuts, doesn't it?
Well, see,
it's like a squeak. You know, it's like, what was it, Annie Haller's all, what is it? It's like a mouse playing a trombone. It's like a rusty, what is it? It's like a wheel, it's a rusty wheel playing a trumpet.
There it is, it's done. It's gone now.
Okay. An actor, an unlikely actor in their own franchise.
Well, what leaps to mind for me, it was a failed TV show. But I would like to see Agent Carter. I'd like to see an Agent Carter movie.
Put it
movie.
Back on.
Or do a movie.
Just, yeah.
Do a one-off, World War II. We do a diesel punk.
Yeah.
Because now the timeline's changed. Right?
Well, see, I know a lot of people that wanted more Captain America in the 40s.
Yeah.
And I know that was, they couldn't do it because they had to keep moving toward the finales. I got a couple friends. My buddy Alex, he said, God, why couldn't they have given us two more Captain America in the 40s
movies? Mm-hmm.
I would be on board for a movie or a TV show with Agent Carter. I thought she was great. I like the character. I like the actress. I think that should have ran another two or three years.
Yeah.
So if you can't bring back the show, then... And what'd they do? They brought it to the 50s, right? Second season was the
50s. I believe so, yeah.
I thought that was fascinating. Do a movie. I don't know. But yeah, more.
That would be my pick. We were just talking about the show. I think someone who could pull that off. Now it's a little bit different because he's part of the MCU. But
who?
I thought, I think you could do, Benedict Cumberbatch could do kind of like something like that. Because you've already kind of got the Sherlock Holmes vibe from him.
Yeah.
I feel like he could pull that off. You know, he might not be the most physically threatening, but you could do him as some kind of...
You know, I think I told you, I just watched that... the reboot of the Wrath of
Khan. That's what we were talking about, yeah.
And he was so
good.
Into darkness. And you're right. He doesn't look like a guy that's going to kick your ass, but they made it believable that he's genetically superior. So, you know, when he throws somebody across the room, you just buy it, you know? It's a mixture of good special effects, but also he's a good actor. He can make you believe that he's this raging, you know.
Yeah.
He's not an android. He's like a genetically engineered.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I bought it. That he's just ready to explode. He's so angry, you know.
Yeah, it's hard because there's a lot of people like, I would have never thought Charlize Theron would be an action star.
And
then she did Mad Max and then she did Atomic Blonde.
Those were both great. She was great in both of those.
Yeah.
So keep those coming, you know.
Make Atomic Blonde a series.
I'd love to see more Atomic Blonde movies. I thought she was great in that.
Yeah, to set him in the 80s.
She is good. I mean, she's not only beautiful, she is a good actress.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a good combination. Crank those out like you're cranking out the John Wick movies. If you want to do three more Atomic Blonde movies.
There's someone I never would have thought would have been an action hero is Keanu Reeves.
Well, until The Matrix.
Until The Matrix. But then, that was all. You know,
he was
enhanced. You know?
He was. I know he can do stunt work. They say even with these John Wick movies, he does as much as he can.
Yeah.
But I guess what? They're directed by the guys that choreographed the Matrix movies, right?
I don't know.
There's some connection. I think the guys that were choreographing the fight scenes in the Matrix are the guys directing the John Wick movie.
No, because that was...
Or no, is it? Maybe it's Atomic Blonde.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. I got that crossed. Scratch that.
Yeah, because it was...
Scratch that. But anyway, I mean,
it was Yen Wu Ping. Because remember, for like
That's
10,
right.
for like 10 minutes, everything would have fight choreography by Eddie Murphy. Remember they did that Three Musketeers?
Yeah, yeah. They
did fight choreography.
That's right. It's like you got to put that on the above the title.
Which reminds me of a great Mystery Science Theater, which you will love, Mystery Science Theater. Fight choreography by Jimmy Finlayson. Somebody gets hit with a pie. I knew you would love that.
They're gonna choreograph his eyebrows.
Yeah, that's it. but that's hard. I would say Agent Carter would be the one.
That would be a good one. I would say also, I want a movie series with Christina Hendricks. You know, I want more Christina Hendricks. I know she's in a TV show. I haven't even watched one episode.
Oh, what is it?
The Good Moms or the Bad Moms?
No, she's also in the...
What is that?
No, she's in the other one they did,
it's like
the Romanoffs.
Was she?
The director of Mad Men, the creator of Mad Men did a show called the Romanoffs.
Oh, really?
And he used certain people from, I think...
I missed
it. I think John Slattery's in that, too.
I missed that.
And it's like, I think the whole thing is, what if people, there were descendants still alive today?
Oh, yeah. They follow various people.
Mm-hmm.
But I think she's in season two of this. What is it?
I don't know.
It's like three moms that are like on the road having a crime spree.
Oh, is she in that?
She is. And they're like season two already. Yeah,
I've heard it's a great show.
Some fan I am. I haven't even checked it out.
But, I didn't know she was on that.
I don't know. You can now see exactly what my predilections are. More Christina Hendricks.
Yeah.
And more Olivia Munn. I think I want Psylocke to have her own series.
here's one from for Screen and Country, BFI. So that's at BFI underscore pod. Check them out, though. That's a really interesting podcast.
I'm going to check that out. So what are they? They're hitting the AFI top 100. They got the BFI.
The BFI.
I'm pretty sure that Third Man is the number one rated.
I'll check it in a minute. I'll check it in a minute for you.
I will be checking that
our
out.
Our friends at the Cult 45 podcast, at Cult 45, still one of my favorite podcast names, Cult 45 podcast. What big bad would you pick for the future of the MCU and why? So who's missing from the MCU villains?
Oh,
rogues gallery that we haven't
seen. Patrick would be better at that. I'm not that familiar with who all the other big bads
are. Well, I'm going to say now that we've opened it up for time travel.
Galactus?
You go Kang the Conqueror. Cuz he's Mr. Time Travel. He's from the year like 3000 or something.
Were they working him into the Fantastic Four?
I believe Kang. I think maybe he may have been a Fantastic Four villain.
Did he kind of look like an insect? The face kind of looks like an insect face?
He kind of looks like just an alien.
Okay.
Just like an alien.
Galactus, I mean.
Galactus would be awesome. But
He's mostly Fantastic Four, right?
Yeah, that's right. Silver Surfer.
Yeah.
Well, you can bring all that back now because Disney owns everything now. So
it's so funny how they have not mentioned that. They keep going, ooh, Deadpool. They own Deadpool now. They also could possibly try to do a decent Fantastic Four movie.
But do people care?
At this point, no, because they've sat through two that were kind of like, eh, and one that was just awful. That last Fantastic Four was awful. That pretty much buried the idea for probably another decade.
Oh, yeah, Kang did turn up in the Fantastic Four. Number 19, October 1963.
But his face kind of look like a jack-o'-lantern? It's like a yellow glowing...
He's blue. He wears like green and purple, kind of like Hulk colors, but he's got a blue face.
Okay.
He's from the 31st century.
Kang the Conqueror.
That's a great name though.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Kang and Kodos.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with who else is out there besides... Is there somebody bigger than Thanos? Is Galactus bigger than Thanos?
Physically.
That's right. He's as big as a planet.
Yeah. Then you have Dormammu, who's like a demon.
Oh, that's the Doctor Strange stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
See, they're working on a second Doctor Strange, I think. So they'll have to bring him in for that.
I'd say they bring in the Joker. At this point, Disney owns everything.
Jesus. Would that finally be a monopoly if they bought DC from Warner Brothers? I don't know how it's not a monopoly now, but if Disney bought Time Warner, would that finally be a monopoly? If you had Marvel and DC characters,
I guess.
Would you finally say, okay, that's a monopoly?
They're letting them do it. I don't understand how it's gotten this far, John.
I don't, because who's the bean counter that says, well, they're not at 75% yet? It's got to be like 50% of all entertainment is Disney now.
Wait till their streaming service drops. Just wait. I mean, we haven't even seen it yet.
Which is why, I guess that's why they're buying all this up. They need content.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody 10 years ago said, it's all about content and we're going to run out. So mm-hmm. we better start buying stuff.
Buy stuff.
We've got the money. Let's buy this stuff, you know?
From the studio that brought you The Cat from Outer Space.
It's amazing how far they've come.
Yeah, right.
Because...
remember in the 80s, they were getting ready to go belly up.
Before 2000, it still looked like... well, let's say before The Little Mermaid. It's mm-hmm. like, well, has this studio got a future? Remember, it was like a 1-2 punch. You had Who Framed Roger Rabbit and The Little Mermaid. It was kind of like a 1-2 punch. Okay, we're back.
And then they built it up. Then they had Beauty and the Beast, and they had Aladdin, Lion King. In the 90s, they really built their kind of cachet back up.
Because it didn't look like they were going to do any. It was, as far as quality animation, it was all over. It took them too long to do a feature, and when they did, nobody gave a shit. So that was, you know, that was amazing that it actually happened.
Yeah, they did it. They really were.
That was a renaissance.
They really were. We have a question from, that was, I would say Kang. That'd be my answer.
Yeah, I would like to see a decent Fantastic Four movie with Galactus stomping around, but.
That would be good.
It's hard to imagine. I mean, you could do it. You just have to get the right person. Get a Joss Whedon or, you know, get somebody.
You can't do the problem with the Fantastic Four is you can't do it too seriously.
Well, on the other hand, you need to make it R-rated. I think that
Whoa.
I don't mean tits and ass. I mean, I think part of the problem with the last three movies is they were PG, and I think it keeps them from going darker. Like with the X-Men movies, those are like PG-13?
Mm-hmm.
You can just go a little darker. And I'm pretty sure that those Fantastic Four movies are a straight PG. That shouldn't make a difference, but I think it prevents them from going to darker places.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they don't want to go to dark places with the Fantastic Four.
That's the first family of comics, John.
Yeah, but I know that with X-Men, being able to take the gloves off and say, well, we're going to go to some dark places, it kind of, at least for these days, it kind of just gets them, it just makes it a little more interesting. It's not the end all, but I think that might have something to do with it. Or it might simply be that they never had somebody really sharp doing the scripting and the directing. You really got to, if you're going to do it.
Yeah.
But you got to wait. You got to wait till everyone forgets how shitty the last one was. There's no way around that. You have to, you know.
That's true.
But boy, well, you had better bring your A game if you're ever going to do. Hey, you had three shots at it.
Look at Spider-Man, though. Look at Spider-Man.
I know.
You had a good first couple movies.
You got to get serious. You have to get somebody of a Joss Whedon quality and just devote all your energy to the script. I just don't think those Fantastic Four movies did not have good scripts. They didn't work out what they wanted to do with them. You've got some very interesting characters. Everybody wants to see the Thing. You know, you want to see somebody do a good job with the Thing.
They went low budget too.
Yeah.
They really didn't get a good cast.
Although you got to say Michael Chiklis is the perfect guy to play the Thing.
Chris Evans is actually a good, pretty good Johnny Storm.
Yeah, I'm not even sure it was the actor's fault. I really put it down to the scripting and the directing. You know,
I just never thought Jessica Alba would be a good.
Well, it's
they,
not.
They just wanted somebody to look good in the suit. It wasn't. that's all it was.
I love
mission accomplished.
I love Jessica Alba, but there must have been people out there who already looked like Sue Storm, mm-hmm. you know? Yeah, I think they really had to work hard to make her look like.
John, here's a question from the Nerdy Bitches at Nerdy Bitches Pod. Check them out. They're great. What is something you feel superior about that is completely unfounded but still a thing? Because we call ourselves the superiority complex. So what do you get smug about? I asked Nicole this. I said, what do I get smug about? And she's like, everything. Literally everything.
That's the answer I was going to give. It's everything.
Well, yeah. I
everything I think I know something about. It's just a drop in the bucket.
Yeah. I get smug about people's taste in music. Like we were talking about. Like if somebody tells me Styx is their favorite band, I judge that. You know, I do.
Nicole, you're right on the money. I say that applies. If you're applying that toward Mario, that applies toward me. It's everything. Just go home. Nobody gives a shit what you know about Chuck Berry, you know. It couldn't matter less.
But we still feel smug about it, don't we?
Yeah, so she's right. Everything. Yeah.
We love it. Yeah, that's the answer to that is everything.
Yeah.
Liz, thanks.
Yeah. That's why we love the show, because the five of us sit here and we can go back and forth like it's everything.
And we judge.
You know, exactly.
We judge Justine for daring not to be smug about the stuff, or daring to question our smugness.
Yeah, yeah.
It's true, though.
Yeah, that's why I love when she's on board with something that you wouldn't expect.
Mm-hmm.
It just floors me, you know.
Shout out to Justine.
I'm still getting a buzz off of her discovering Laugh-In. I'm still like, yeah, that's great.
See, Netflix, man.
Netflix. How else was anybody younger than 50, how was anybody going to run into Laugh-In without Netflix?
Yes. Suck it, Spielberg.
Suck it to me.
Brent from the Home Video Hustle. Home Video Hustle.
Spielberg.
They already failed at it horribly, but if they were going to try again and you had control over it, how would you remake and create the Universal Monster Universe, or the Dark Universe, as they called it?
You can't. I've thought about this a lot. Everybody rolls their eyes back in their head. Yes, we know. It's all you think about is the Universal Monsters.
And Christina Hendricks. You put her in there.
You make her the Bride of Frankenstein.
Yeah, yeah. Hey.
And then lock me in the room with her. So bad. So
yeah, right. Bad. Yeah. No matter how much I scream, no matter how cruelly I beg.
Do not open that door. But then I don't scream. Yeah. Get me the hell out of here. Yeah, I used to think there was a way. I will tell you this. Outside of Guillermo del Toro, I don't know if he's given up on it. He was going to do some Frankenstein movies, or maybe a Frankenstein movie. Maybe he's still thinking about it. I've kind of lost track of where he's at. He wanted to do either Frankenstein, the original movie, or Bride of Frankenstein. He wanted to do a remake or a reboot or a reimagining. And I just don't know if he's still on board with that. He might have gotten that all out of his system when he did Shape of Water.
Mm-hmm.
But he wanted to. For years he wanted to. And I think he was going to be a part of that Universal Monsterverse, or whatever
they
were going to call it. And when it all fell apart after that crappy Mummy movie, it all fell apart. And I just think it's not going to happen now. I don't know that it can be done.
Well, I would say if you are going to do it, you take what you've already said. You take somebody like a Guillermo del Toro.
Can you think of one other person who's got that sensibility?
Yeah, no.
Can you think of anybody who could bring that kind of vibe? Because it's really, it's out of time. The reason those movies work is because they're of their time.
You'd have to do it as a period piece.
Not only are they period pieces, but even the time they were shot are now. It's a different time mm-hmm. period. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, they shot those things, and it was always a little nebulous what era it is. Is there a car? Is there horses?
Mm-hmm.
You never quite know. You know, like Bride of Frankenstein, speak through this device. Oh, it's a telephone. What? You never quite know. Invisible Man, you're like, well, there's cars, so. But you're never quite sure what the time period is on some of those.
Yeah, Invisible Man always seems the most contemporary.
Yeah, and I guess The Mummy, too. It's like modern times. But when you see the Dracula and Frankenstein movies, you're always kind of like, well, what year is this supposed to be?
Yeah.
But so not only are they stories that take place like in the 1800s, but they were shot like 100 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So now a movie shot in the early 30s, that's almost 100 years ago. That's a period piece. Just doing it as a contemporary movie, mm-hmm. it's a period piece. Also, there's a vibe to those. Anybody who thinks you can recreate that vibe, you can't. It all comes down to the way they were shot, the limits of the production. It forced them to get creative because they weren't real big budget movies. The casting, just the look of the black and white, not to belabor the point on the black and white, but those movies, part of the reason they work is because they're in black and white. It's an artistic choice. I mean, back then it was a budget choice. You weren't going to spend what you spent on Gone with the Wind. You could have shot those in color, but there'd be no way to make the money back. But they wouldn't have looked as good. Something like Frankenstein or Werewolf of London or Dracula, it wouldn't have looked good in color.
Yeah. I think the only way you make it work is, like you said, it has to be one creative vision. So you get like a Guillermo del Toro, you put him in charge of that.
Sure.
And then what you have to do is do a strong movie out of the gate.
Yeah.
And then as the sequels come, you do what they did in the 40s. That's when you start crossing. So if you have a good Frankenstein movie and you do a good Wolfman movie, then eventually you just put them in the same, you know what I mean?
Don't put the cart before the horse.
Yeah.
Like that Mummy movie, I don't know why they picked the Mummy first, you know? And then you're trying to cram too much information into the first movie. The way Marvel did it, you just slowly, it was a slow build.
Mm-hmm.
Because they weren't even sure what they were going to do the first couple movies, and they just slowly built it up.
Yeah.
But I think those stories don't work unless they're period pieces. they've tried.
It's funny you
like Van Helsing. They tried, and it's too dopey. You know, if you make them too humorous or too fast, you know, if you make the pace, those stories do not lend themselves to a speedy pace.
Yeah.
Van Helsing was a textbook example of how you don't do those classic monster movies. Too fast, you crammed three monsters into the first movie. You're tear-assing around like super fast, quick cuts. You know, it just didn't work.
Here's a question from Bad Ideas Podcast, History of Bad Ideas, at Bad Ideas Podcast. What's up, History of Bad Ideas? How you doing, guys? Who is sexier, Chris Pratt, Chris Evans, or Chris Pine? And it's a screw it, Pine isn't in their league. I think Chris Pine's a good looking guy.
Justine's not here. Why are they asking us?
That's part of it. I'm going to say Chris Evans. That's America's ass.
I don't know.
John, listen.
Yeah.
You got to let that guard down. I know you grew up in the 70s.
What's the question? Who's the sexiest?
Yeah. Pine,
Pratt,
or Evans? Uh-huh. I got to go Cap. Team Cap all the way.
Yeah.
Yeah?
I don't know.
Although Pine, I think, is a handsome dude. Not going to lie. He was great as the alternate Spider-Man in the Spider-Verse.
Chris Pratt seems like a regular guy. Like, if a regular guy exercised and worked out, because I guess in like Parks and Recreation, he wasn't all buffed out.
No,
right?
He's just like kind of a
schlub. So yeah. It's kind of like, yeah, that's like a regular person, you know. Yeah. If you work at it, you, yeah.
I'm not about to do that.
Suddenly, you're a leading man.
Our friend at Besotted Geek Pod, the Besotted Geek, retired from podcasting at Besotted Geek Pod, still active on the Twitter though, and apparently. They're going to do a one-shot return to talk about Game of Thrones.
Ah.
So I'm looking forward to that.
That's great.
The best movie adapted from TV and vice versa. So best movie adapted from TV and best TV show adapted from a movie. Best movie adapted from TV.
There aren't many of them.
Well, I'm going to say, I would have said Star Trek.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you know what? Honestly,
yeah.
Those Mission Impossible movies keep getting better and better.
Yeah, I know. The odd thing about that is they are very, I agree. I like all the Mission Impossible movies. They don't have much to do with the TV show,
no,
but I guess that's not the question.
Eric of Aragon answered, and I kind of agree with he said The Fugitive.
Absolutely.
Was the best TV.
I agree.
Yeah.
You know, that's one of the few, it's not like a franchise. Now, mm-hmm. If you remove the franchise element, which gets rid of Star Trek and Mission Impossible.
Yeah, I'm going to say Fugitive, man.
That was a solid A movie. And the other thing I would say, I would say he's correct. The Fugitive is right there.
So what?
But I would also say the two Addams Family movies.
Oh, those were good too.
I thought they were very well done. Very well done. Very hard to make you forget. The TV show is so spot on.
Well, when they make the Gilligan's Island movie with Christina Hendricks as Ginger Grant.
And she could do it.
Yeah,
she's got the red hair.
That's it.
Oh,
that's not all she has.
Who would play Marianne? Olivia Munn.
Okay.
Mario's all, we've lost you, haven't we? We just lost you.
Let's see. So, vice versa, TV from, I'm going to say MASH is probably, or The Odd Couple.
You got it. You got
MASH
it.
MASH or The Odd Couple.
Those two. You got it.
I've heard Fargo is a great show, but I haven't seen it.
Yeah, and I wonder.
I've heard Fargo's fantastic.
But it's a different story every time out, right?
Yeah, it's kind of like, it takes place in Fargo.
Yeah.
I'm gonna say MASH or,
I agree,
or Odd Couple.
I agree. I can't even think of another one from movie to TV. I can't even think of one that works besides Odd Couple and MASH. Yeah, I think you're right.
There's been a lot of stuff from movies.
Those are both solid.
Yeah. What about? Okay. That's it. That's all I got. Cats. Yes or hell yes. To cats, the idea of cats.
Oh, hell yes. I got two cats.
You have two now?
Well, when my mom passed away, I got her cat. So.
What's that cat's name?
It was a Siamese cat.
What's the cat?
Missy.
And what's the other cat's name?
My cat is Tasha.
Oh, Tasha, yeah.
Natasha.
I know Tasha.
Tasha.
She's a good kid.
That's a calico, and the other cat's a Siamese.
Tasha's a good cat.
Yeah.
How old is Tasha now?
Christ, I think she's coming up on 18.
Dude, she's
and she's in good health, knock on wood. She's in pretty good health.
She's also very friendly.
Yeah.
She's a very friendly cat.
The Siamese is like a year and a half, 2 years old. So
how do they get along?
They've never met. I keep them in different sides of the house.
Oh, wow.
I just didn't think it would work. I'm not there most of the time. I'm like, this is not going to work. They're going to go out.
They must know.
They do. But what can they do? They got a door between them. And they don't go crazy trying to get out that door. But I just thought, this is not going to work. They are going to go at it, and I'm not going to be there. I'm going to be at work. So,
yeah, it's tough.
Yeah.
Okay, this is from Eric of Aragon.
How about you? Did you say cats or hell yes or yes?
I say yes to cats.
You don't have a cat.
We do have a cat, Lucy.
You don't say hell yes.
No, because Lucy's a pain in the ass that likes to announce her presence at 3 or 4 in the morning, and just let you know I'm here. I would like to say hello from the foot of the bed where you can't reach me, and just until you wake up, and then I leave.
Tasha kind of does that, not quite that crazy. So what I do is at that point, I just get up, I put her in another room and shut the door.
That's the part, John. I have to get out of bed. I'm awake.
Yeah, you have to almost sleepwalk it. or you have to decide they're not coming into the bedroom with you, you know.
Okay, here we go. This is from Eric of Aragon. I'm a dog person, but my cat's fine. I like her. I never had a cat before, so we bought this cat, and I'm like,
You're like, whatever.
We rescued this cat. So
what's her name?
Lucy.
What kind of cat is it?
I used to know this. I don't know.
It's a furry cat.
She's furry.
Where'd you get Lucy from?
We rescued her from the shelter.
No, the name Lucy.
Oh, my daughter named her because our dog at the time was named Ricky.
Ah.
So it was Ricky and Lucy.
That's great.
And Ricky decided, I want no part of this, and died. So here we go.
Wow.
Eric of Aragon, our good friend, Eric_of_Aragon, Eric Aragon, a former listener of the month here. John has introduced you to great music, TV, and movies. What have you brought to the table for him? So you have to answer that.
What?
So you have introduced me
to
great music, TV, and movies. What have I brought to you?
Oh, my God. You got 2 hours? I mean, my God, jazz. Any knowledge I have of jazz all comes from you.
There you go.
If I have any concept of all.
Oh, go on.
How jazz works, what's the hierarchy, what's the timeline, it's all from you. You know, I had a very shaky understanding of all of that.
Well,
to this day.
My response was, I introduced him to an adoring audience, and then he said, you know, he doesn't believe you when you talk of the internet, is what he said. It's true.
I still have a hard time believing that anybody gives a shit about what I say. But it's, I would say, my ever-increasing love of jazz to this day, it all stems from knowledge you have imparted to me.
You're welcome.
Going all the way back to when I met you. I think the first day I met you back at, what was it, 82?
No, 89 or 90.
Oh, okay. Well, that's still 30 years ago. That's 30
years. I would have been
11 ago.
In 82.
I think we instantly bonded when you made some remark about Gene Krupa. And I went, this is the guy. This is the guy I want to hang out with. Because I, you know, what, you're 10 years younger than me or what?
Yes, sir. Exactly.
And I just thought, I'm thinking to myself, nobody even knows who Gene Krupa is. And then I find out you are the number one Gene Krupa fan in the Southern California area. I go to your house, you got Gene Krupa albums on the wall, framed.
That's right. That's right.
Framed.
Those are down now, but they'll be making an appearance.
Was impressive.
Along with my signed Kinks albums.
Yeah. So that is priceless.
Thanks, John.
Not to mention the fact that we are so copacetic on—is that a word? Copacetic.
Yeah, that's true.
As far as the whole sci-fi thing, sci-fi and monsters.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we're completely simpatico on that. You know?
That's right. So we're gonna go see Godzilla, in spite of what the critics say.
Exactly.
Who goes to see a Godzilla movie for the story? Are there giant monsters fighting in it? Yes, I'm in.
So you have to, yeah, it's one thing if you're sort of like angry that maybe he doesn't look the way he looked in the last Godzilla movie, but to sort of like, these movies are critic proof in a way, because if you want to see giant monsters slugging it out, well, how far can they fall? how far off the rails can it go? You know?
Nope, that's it. There's going to be giant monsters fighting in it. That's all we want. That's all we want.
Yeah.
I don't want you to see... I don't need a story.
It's critic proof. A movie like that is critic proof. You know. Yeah.
Now, see, I will judge stuff harshly. I will unwrap everything in a Game of Thrones episode and take the writers to task. But you give me a Godzilla movie, I'm like, I take it without question.
Now, if it's a bad Godzilla movie, like that one with Matthew Broderick, we'll say so. We'll say that was a bad Godzilla movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you agree on that?
Yeah, not my favorite. But I'll tell you, this last one they did was, I was on the fence. I didn't hate it as much as a lot of other people did, but I wanted more Godzilla. So this looks like it's going to give me what I want.
Yeah,
which is just Godzilla stepping on things.
Yeah. And although Alex said, with all these other monsters, it's like, is it going to be one of those things like those Batman movies where there's so many characters you don't get enough Godzilla? You know, like toward the end, those Batman movies where you had all these new characters, you're like, well, where's Batman? So if they're going to introduce like 10 new monsters, how much screen time is Godzilla going to get?
He's going to whip them all. He's going to whip ass. So, I mean.
I did like the trailer. So he's on our side now? Yeah. He's going to fight these other guys?
That's it.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense, but it happened in all the movies.
Yeah.
So I'm excited about it. Here we go, John. This is from our friend Michael Bagford, also former Listener of the Month, at Michael Bagford. Since all the young guns are away, what music artist would have been good in 80s or 90s action films? The artist can be from their heyday era or not have been even alive at this time period. Well, somebody said Dee Dee Ramone. Craig Cohen responded Dee Dee Ramone would have been.
Is this in real time?
No, these are not. These.
How do they know that just the two of us?
Oh, because I put it out on the Twitter.
Oh, okay.
Just the two of us, you and I.
So what is this? A musician that should be in an 80s or 90s
action movie? Who would have been at home in an 80s or 90s action movie?
As an actor.
Mm-hmm.
And who did you say?
Well, somebody said Dee Dee Ramone.
Yeah. That's an odd choice. That's an odd choice. Dee Dee Ramone.
Mm-hmm.
You ever see Rock and Roll High School?
Yeah.
I love that movie.
Gene Simmons did that movie, Runaway, with Tom Selleck. Remember that?
He was the bad
guy. And he was actually pretty okay in
that. Sure.
80s or 90s action film?
Oh, and Mick Jagger was a bad guy in...
what was it?
It was another sci-fi movie. What the hell was it called?
I know which one you're talking about.
What the hell? Sleeper? Not Sleeper. Lock Up? No, not Lock Up. It was another one-word title, I think. What the hell was it? I think it might have been a Philip K. Dick thing. Let's see. What was it? Gene Simmons? Runaway was about little robot monsters or... Not monsters, like robot, little robots on wheels. I'm going to get this. It's like Free Jack.
Free Jack. That's what it was.
I got it. How did I pull that out of my butt?
That I just pulled it up right now.
Free Jack.
That's a 1992
He might have even been a producer on that.
Emilio Estevez, Mick Jagger, Rene Russo, and Anthony Hopkins before they were in Thor. They were in Free Jack.
So what was it? Was that a sci-fi?
Yeah, sci-fi. Yep.
And what was it? Like robots or cars?
I don't remember. The Runaway was robots. They were little.
Like the from Star Trek, like zzz, zzz, right? These little, little one looks like a roller skate.
Yeah, they blew people up.
But there's
up.
Like a million of them or something, right?
Yeah, they blew people up.
Okay.
Tom Selleck is Runaway in Runaway. Was that what that called? In Runaway? Poor Tom Selleck, man. His whole movie career was trying to make up for not having been in Raiders of the Lost Ark.
You can't weep for him because he did very well. Hell, this show he's on now, Blue Bloods, that's got to be 10 years, 11 years he's been doing. Yeah, he didn't have the movie career he thought he was going to have, but still, about the time he did that Three Men and a Baby, that was a monster hit.
Yeah.
I can't think of any others. What other movies did he do that were monster hits? That Quigley Down Under, was that a hit?
I don't remember. High Road to China was not.
No.
That was his attempt.
No, he did not get the big movie career. Some people thought he was going to be like the next Cary Grant or something. That Quigley Down Under. Oh, you know who's the bad guy in that? Was Alan Rickman. And I think Laura San Giacomo was the love interest. It was a Western set in Australia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think it had a big name director, too. So, you know, you can't weep for the guy, but he certainly didn't have the movie career that Harrison Ford had.
Well, you mean the greatest actor of the time? Quigley Down Under starred Laura San Giacomo, Alan Rickman. And it was directed by, that was 1990. I remember that movie.
It was a Western set in Australia, and as I recall, it was pretty sharp.
It was directed by Simon Windsor.
and
who also directed
Lonesome Dove.
Lonesome Dove.
There
yeah.
you go. Okay, so that was like an A picture, yeah.
Yeah, who? So musicians, though, at that time.
See, my mom, I think, loved that movie because she loved Tom Selleck, and she really was a big Alan Rickman fan.
Ah.
She caught all those funny little British comedies and things he did outside of, like, Die Hard, you know. She, I don't know how she discovered him, probably through Die Hard, but then she would catch all these other things he was in.
Sure.
So I think that's another, that's one that she really got a kick out of.
Let's see. I'm going to say from the 80s, just as far as, like, a... well, I mean...
So a musician that could have been in a movie, an action movie. You want to say David Lee Roth. It would have been pretty dopey, but...
Yeah, kind of.
Physically, I mean, they probably couldn't have tamed him. You know, they, you could just imagine the director saying, bring it down.
Yeah.
Bring it down. Less. Less is more.
David Lee Roth in Gymkhana. Because he's doing those high kicks and stuff.
Well, I'm thinking like David Lee Roth in Predator. Whoa! This thing is, whoa! Okay,
bring anytime,
it,
man.
Bring it down. Bring it down.
Stick around. Whoa, yeah.
Even Schwarzenegger's going, bring it down. Yeah. Bring it down.
I'm right here, man. Kill me. Kill me now, man.
I don't have time to bleed, man. Whoa.
Whoa, yeah. Every time he kills someone.
I'm talking about Yankee Rose. Whoa.
You're going to get some leg tonight for sure, man.
Come on, Dave. Give us a break.
One break. Coming up.
The Predator goes, give us a break. Whoa, one break.
David Lee
coming
Roth.
Up.
David Lee Roth in Blade Runner. I've seen things you can't even dream of, man.
The whole movie just goes out the window. Everybody's operating on like this level, and then you go, man, that suit is you. It's like, Ridley Scott's down, bring it way down.
There's nothing worse than an itch you can't scratch, man. That's it. David Lee Roth.
A little bit to the right. That's it. A little bit to the right.
That's my pick. I'm going to go David Lee Roth because you can put him in anything in the 80s. Oh, my God.
Well, you could have put him in something like Die Hard. Though you could have put him in a Die Hard.
Oh, he would have been great as the
as a bad guy,
or as the slime ball, the coke addict that tries to sell out. Remember, he's the guy that he was trying to hit on Bruce Willis's wife.
Yes, yes.
That guy would have been good. Yeah.
Or like what was it? The Deadpool. What's the one that Jim Carrey played? The the rock star in the Deadpool.
Oh yeah.
Before anybody knew who Jim Carrey was, he was That's playing right. like this sort of
David Lee, DLR.
Yeah, you know, there's a certain kind of movie.
Like, in the 80s would have been the perfect time for
it. Like, think about all those Predator ripoffs. You know, there were movies that were sort of like ripoffs of Predator. That's what it would have worked.
Now that I'm thinking of the hair, David Lee Roth as the lead in Lethal Weapon with Danny Glover.
Yeah.
I can't take it, man.
Right, the guy in the building. The guy that wants to jump off the building. And then he jumps off in a split. He does the splits. You know? I'm going to do it. I'm going to jump, man. He does the splits all the way down.
And as he's going down, he's like, whoa, yeah.
Whoa. And at the bottom, he's got two beautiful nurses. And we'll take care of you.
And then Eric of Aragon asked one last question. Squad 50, or Emergency or $6 Million Man? Which did you like better?
Gee, that's an odd choice. God, those are two completely different shows.
Yeah. I was a fan of Emergency, or as I used to call it, for some reason I thought the whole name of the show was Emergency Squad 51, but I think it's just
In reruns, it might have been.
Oh, okay.
Sometimes if they had something in reruns that was still running new at night, they would have to throw another name on it.
Oh, okay.
Like Andy of Mayberry. I think there was a time where, I think when it was running in prime time, if they were rerunning the old ones, they'd have to call it Andy of Mayberry or something. To differentiate between the two. I was always a big fan of $6 Million Man.
Yeah, me too.
Emergency's fun, but you've seen one, you've seen them all. And with $6 Million Man, that first season, I was really into it.
Da-da-da-da.
And then it goes...
Yep, of course. Steve Lawson's a man barely alive.
Yeah, I really loved that show. I was like in sixth grade. To me, that was the ultimate. Was the ultimate show until like season two, and then you're like, all right, I guess they've done everything they can do with him. You know, picking up a car and ripping a door off a safe. You know, you're like, okay, I guess they've just done everything they can afford to do with their budget. You know.
Yeah, I love that show, though. That was huge. And like I said on the show, or like I said on Twitter, Steve Austin gets name checked in Father Christmas by the Kinks. So that automatically ups the we don't want a Steve Austin outfit.
Ah, yeah. I don't think I've ever caught that line.
Yeah, it's in there.
That's so great.
How about that?
I am still just high as a kite over Supersonic Rocket Ship being in the biggest movie of all time. Think about it. That's going to end up being the biggest movie of all time, and there's the Kinks.
And the Kinks are right in there.
And I love that it's not You Really Got Me or Lola. Mm-hmm. It's this little non-single, or maybe it was a single.
I love that
Probably
song.
Was, Supersonic Rocket Ship.
And he's doing in one of his characters. He's singing one of his little characters.
And it fits the scene.
Mm-hmm.
It's a perfect, you get the Hulk sitting in the back of the truck. Mm-hmm. And they're just sort of, just the perfect song.
Love it.
I wonder if that's on the soundtrack album.
It's not that I see. Oh, no, it might be. I haven't checked. Before we go, real quick, we have about 5 minutes, but I just want you to know, John, I don't know if you ever caught it. I missed it because I didn't have an HBO account, but, you know, post Game of Thrones, everybody's looking for a new show to watch. I just started watching Deadwood. I had seen the first couple of episodes here and there, but I never had a chance to sit down and watch it. And it's been on I have HBO Go for like years now.
Yeah.
I'm watching the whole thing, and boy, oh boy. Did you ever watch it?
I watched a couple episodes, and I was thinking that is what I should be watching now that Game of Thrones is
off. Oh, my God. Check it out. Because
I'm an Ian McShane fan.
Oh, this is his thing. What a great role. And you can tell he's just having a blast with it.
Yeah.
He's just having a blast with
it. I think this is what put him back on the map.
Oh,
yeah.
Good stuff.
So what was it, 3 seasons?
3 seasons. And they're doing a reunion movie.
I heard that.
It's going to release on Friday. So I'm on the last episode of season one today. So I'll have it by the next show. I should have the whole thing wrapped up, but.
And so the show is going to take place 10 years later?
10 years later.
That's a smart move because it's been, what, 10 years since?
It's been about 18 years since. About 10 years. Yeah.
Yeah.
13 years, I think.
I think they were always a little bit like they were blindsided. They didn't know they were going to get canceled.
Yeah.
They didn't get to tie things up.
No.
And they thought they were coming back for a fourth season, I think.
Man.
It's like Carnival. There are people that really loved Carnival. I don't think that made it past 2 seasons.
It's a great show. Deadwood. I've never saw Carnival.
Yeah.
All right, that's it. Just watch that and watch Barry. I've been watching Barry on HBO. Really, really great dry comedy.
Yeah,
with a little bit of where it's the Bill Hader playing a hitman. Very funny.
And I hear Henry Winkler is great.
He's amazing.
Yeah,
he's very.
How great that he gets a third act.
He was great on Arrested Development. He wasn't on it very much, but he was so good in it.
He was. He can do anything. It's just, you know, all these years had to pass. You know.
You got typecast, yeah.
You got typecast.
All right, that's going to wrap it up. So for John and myself, we're going to say that this transmission ends now, and we're going to ask you to kindly fight the power. John, do you have anything last parting words for the kids out there?
No.
All right, then we will say adios.
Drummer stomping, drum boogie, drum boogie. It really is a killer. Drum boogie, drum boogie. The drum boogie woogie. The rhythm won't offend you.
Boogie.
It's really gonna send you. Drum boogie, drum boogie.
Boogie.
It really is a killer. Drum boogie, drum boogie. The drum boogie woogie.
Boogie.
You hear the piano.